How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Y'all, I am so excited because Through the Gryffindor is heading back out on tour. Starting in February of 2025, we'll be performing live shows in Charlotte, Orlando, Tampa, Jacksonville, Atlanta, and Nashville. And as always, we will be bringing all of the magic with a tour-long Jay versus Ben trivia showdown with questions submitted and asked by all of you. And then, of course, we will dim the lights for a live recording of Through the Gryffindor. And y'all, these nights have made for some of my all-time favorite since we have started making content on the internet. It is truly a magical evening, nerding out Harry Potter style with the very best community online. Plus, we have a VIP upgrade for each show if you want to come and meet Jay and I, take photos, ask questions, and score an exclusive signed tour poster before the show begins. We would love to see you. We'd love to meet you, and we hope you will come and join us for all of the fun. Tickets are available in the show notes for every show or at supercarlinbrothers.com.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands and dust off your broomsticks and join us as we unlock the riddles inside the Goblet of Fire, Chapter 2, The Scar, live in Los Angeles! Oh, man.
Oh man.
Yes, LA.
We got nothing makes me happier than the looks on people's faces when you said riddle.
Yeah.
Because it's just like everybody's like, oh, new word.
New word. I know. What was it gonna be?
And nothing could be more perfect for here inside of Goblet of Fire.
Inside of Goblet of Fire, which the first chapter is The Riddle House.
It is indeed. Yes. The Riddle House. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, which we did last night.
We did last night.
The Riddle House is sort of an amazing one because for a couple of reasons, I think, as it pertains to this evening. The Riddle House itself is just kind of cool because it's like a double meaning itself. It's
yes.
Like the Riddle household as well as the house where nobody knows
what happens. The mystery yes. itself is yes. a riddle. Yeah.
But the other really cool thing, I think, for the folks here in LA tonight is the fact that it's one of four non-Harry-centric chapters.
Yeah, you don't see it from Harry's point of view.
Right. Can you list the four?
I think it is The Boy Who Lived.
Yes. Chapter yeah. one.
Chapter one, book one. Then we have The Riddle House. Then we have The Other Minister.
Yes.
And Spinner's End.
Nailed it.
Somehow I got to five.
Somehow I got to five. Oh, man. Yeah, so this is really cool, I think, for even beyond that, though, is because we're getting our first glimpse at Harry, like, there is something I feel like that, like, a gear shift that seems to happen as you enter Goblet of Fire. Like, I think the octane gets turned up a lot.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's almost as if, like, books 1 through 3 are, like, the prologue, and now, like, Voldemort's yeah. return is now imminent.
It is imminent.
Yes.
Yeah, especially because, like, it does feel like the first three are almost like the prologue, because in this one chapter, it sort of sums up all three books. Just sort of like, boom. Yeah.
We do have, I think this is the last time that we'll do it. I think this is the last recap
yeah.
chapter we ever get. Yes, yes. And yeah. and I do think there's another thing to be yeah brought up about that, which is just, I think that the writing had kind of progressively gotten better up until this point. And it's actually a recap that I think plays out in such a way that feels reasonably natural while also being like, hey, in case you've been hearing all the Harry Potter hype and you just happen to be at the airport and Goblet of Fire just dropped and you want to pick it up and you haven't read the first three, we got you covered.
Don't worry. Yeah, there was like a sentence in here where I was like, wow, that was like all of book three in like three sentences.
Yes.
Like, man, we just spent, I don't know, 30 weeks reading that book.
Right.
Here it is in three sentences. Okay.
Yeah, it's stretched a little bit.
They filled in some of the blanks. Yeah.
Take all the ins and outs. Okay, so chapter two, one of the things we have to talk about first is, of course, the chapter art.
Of course, which looks like we can show you.
We'll
this
show
time.
You guys the chapter. Yeah, look at that. Hey. Yeah.
Can everybody see it? Okay. It's like it reminds me of like elementary school. It's like everyone see.
Yes. Good. And the rainbow fish gave away all of his scales.
That's right. Man, so chapter art wise, I do like this one. It's pretty cool. You get a really good look at Harry's scar, which you don't always get to see like very often canonically in the books.
Not at all. And I think the scar is really kind of like a great, it's a great chapter title for this one, because this is going to be the first time that Harry is experiencing, well, I mean, kind of carrying over from chapter one. It's the first time that Harry is experiencing the mental connection between himself and Lord Voldemort.
Like, yes.
All of a sudden, the scar stops just being this like artifact of the like original attack, and like now it's almost like this like antenna that like exists between those two characters. So I feel like it's very well set up. It's very well titled. And the only thing is that Harry always just looks like he looks. And to be fair, he's only 14, but he looks so boyish to me in this particular image. So it's a good one.
Yeah. He just looks like a little bit startled, you know?
He does.
Not like, oh my God, I was just seeing through the Dark Lord.
Right. Yeah, he's like, oh, goodness me. Oh,
wow.
I forgot to take out the trash can last night. But to be fair to Harry, the literal last words that we would have said were, 200 miles away, the boy called Harry Potter woke with a start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there you go.
That's the start for you.
There you go. That's the start. In case you want to recap from the first chapter, because you couldn't have listened to it just now. Basically, Voldemort and Wormtail are plotting the year's plan in the Riddle House, and Frank Bryce is sneaking up on him in the middle of the night, and he overhears them talking about it, and then is eventually invited in, very politely, and then murdered.
Yeah. You forgot one of the most important details from chapter one, which is the fact that when Frank enters the house, he's overhearing exceptionally well what is going on in the conversation between Wormtail and Voldemort.
Yeah.
And at some point in time, he references, who is going to milk Nagini for me? And it's one of those questions where you're like, what does Frank think Nagini is?
I know. Because Wormtail says Nagini is exploring the house, and Voldemort's like, who's going to milk Nagini? Frank doesn't know it's a snake.
It's like,
and it's a weird thing to say about a snake. Like, does Frank think there's like a cow walking around the house?
Cowdini,
yeah. He's like,
new headcanon.
How did I miss it?
Yes.
Yeah.
My other actual favorite thing, just because I have to bring it up from last night, is that when you look at the chapter art of the way that Nagini does happen to be depicted, it's kind of in this like waveform kind of like method of slithering, which I like to think is actually accurate. And as Nagini would slither along, you would kind of get like a like flump, 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 flump.
You know how snakes slither.
You know how snakes slither.
Up and down.
It's very natural.
Like a waveform.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was chapter one.
That was chapter one. Yeah. Oh, man. But let's see. Let's jump in to chapter two here. So Harry wakes up flat on his back, breathing hard as though he had been running. So like Ben said, this is the very first time anything like this has ever happened, that he's actually seen through Voldemort, or like had the mental connection at all. And it's really interesting to me how it is described. It says the old scar, which was shaped like a bolt of lightning, which like, yeah, thanks. was burning beneath his fingers, which to me sounds like it's like literally hot to the touch.
That's exactly how it's written, even though like the next line is like as though someone had just pressed like a white hot wire to his skin.
Yeah.
It's like it does seem like it is like hot.
Well, I mean, if someone did that, it would be hot.
It would be.
Yeah.
It would be. Yeah.
I've always just assumed it's sort of just like hurt.
Yes.
But didn't think it like actually was heating up.
But I think this is like a really, this is good, like a good establishing shot, if you will, because as like the story will progress, we will of course know that every single time Voldemort is feeling extreme, like anger. Or something intense,
yeah.
Harry will feel this pain. But I have always felt like the description and like the build up to the moment in the graveyard when Voldemort finally is able to like press his finger to Harry's forehead.
Yeah.
It's like, you can feel it.
You can feel
it. You're like, oh my gosh.
Right. It is intense at that point. It's not from afar. He's physically touching it.
Right.
Yeah. So that's how Harry wakes up with his burning hot scar, which is shaped like a bolt of lightning, if you didn't know.
Yeah.
And he's like, I guess it's never happened, so he's freaking out. It's still painful. He looks in the mirror, trying to like collect himself. It says a skinny boy of 14 looked back at him, which, just in case you're keeping track of the time, means that his birthday has passed.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is the first time that this has happened, but we don't skip over it. We miss July 31st altogether.
Yeah,
which is just too bad.
I know. We're just sort of like 6 weeks into summer. Just, you know, I guess the Dursleys was fine.
Right, and you know, this was actually kind of interesting because we were reading the chapter yesterday, and I think it says that it's like sometime in August, and I was like, well, wait a second, how can it be in August? We still have a birthday to attend.
Yeah.
But no. So basically we just glide right over.
We glide right over it. Yeah. We get a little bit more about it later, but it says Harry's trying to recall what he had been dreaming because it had seemed so real. What's interesting is like his interpretation is that it's a dream, and he's had like weird dreams in the past where he's been like, you know, seen Quirrell and stuff, and he's like, there's been some of that, but this was not a dream at all. This is like actually what he had seen. And then it's interesting how it describes it. He says there've been two people he knew, one he didn't. So that's Voldemort and Wormtailer, who he knows, Frank Bryce, who's just wondering about snake cows, who he doesn't know. And he talks about when whoever turns around, he had felt a spasm of horror when he had seen what was in the chair, which to me is unusual because you'd think the connection would offer Harry sight like specifically through Voldemort. But
you're right.
It's not. He has like a, like, he's like floating, just sort of, he has like a camera angle in the room, you know?
His consciousness is just sort of in there. But
yeah.
Even that does sort of make like some sense, at least, as like what's going on the other side, is because like part of what's going on with Frank is that like he's walking up to the door and he's listening and he's overhearing all of, you know, the conversation, which is just like a giant exposition between, you know, Wormtail and Voldemort, as if on their entire journey they wouldn't have had time to like discuss what their plans were.
But right.
Like,
yeah.
It's like, no. Now that we have like the crackling fire in the hearth and there's the man waiting in the staircase, now let's lay it all out neatly.
Convenient.
But the big thing in the chapter as well for the Riddle House is that it makes it very, very clear just how powerful of a Legilimens Voldemort actually is, because he is actively throughout the entire chapter facing away from Frank Bryce.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that we're kind of getting this like omniscient, like room side view, it, like, I think it makes some sense because Voldemort's like, what he's seeing is not really what's actively important.
That's literally interesting.
Just the room.
That you can see around the room because Voldemort's like scanning the room.
The room. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Does that track? Does that make sense to you?
That makes sense, yes. Okay. That is interesting.
Yes. Then the other thing that we get here is a detail, and this was another one that it's like, it's so important to have kind of like carried over from the last chapter, but it says that he heard the voice of Lord Voldemort. Harry felt as though an ice cube had slipped down into his stomach at the very thought. And this is like the third time in two chapters now that anytime Voldemort is speaking, there is like this like very, very intense, cold sensation that seems to accompany it.
Like, yeah, like when Frank hears him, like all the hair on the back of his neck stands up and he like feels like it got really cold. But they always describe the voice as being cold, but I've always thought it was like, that's how it sounds, not like how it feels.
I know, but it makes you wonder a little bit. So this was sort of like my thinking on this particular equation, is that like there is a known beast within the wizarding world that we've just spent a lot of time with that makes you feel exceptionally cold.
Yeah.
And it's the Dementors.
Yeah.
And so what we know that Voldemort is in right now is some version of like a very rudimentary body. So I'm not suggesting that he is a Dementor, but like, I wonder if there is anything that like where Dementors come from isn't being like interwoven into the process of creating this like kind of odd, scaly baby form of Voldemort.
Little infant baby has to be fed his milk in the night. Yeah. His snake milk.
Which is venom, by the way, if you're wondering. When they're like, they're going to milk Nagini, and you're like, well, reptiles
don't
have milk.
That's a terrible visual.
It is, I know. They just means harvesting the venom.
Yes.
Which I guess he's drinking. I
out of a bottle?
Presumably.
Yeah. Yes, which, I mean, like, I can't allow myself to believe it's a baby bottle.
No. We may never know.
But somehow, if it's not a baby bottle, it almost means it's like a glass brown, like...
It's like a beer bottle.
Like a beer bottle.
He's just, like, so, throwing it back.
So then you got, like, Voldemort sitting in this, like, big armchair, you know, he's like...
Wormtail, could you get me some more milk? Oh, man. So what's interesting, too, is that he keeps calling him Wormtail, which, like, when Harry thinks of it, it says a small man called Peter. So Harry's still calling him Peter, but Voldemort will only call him Wormtail for the rest of the story.
Despite the fact that Wormtail will not become a rat, I don't believe for the rest of the story.
For the rest of the story, that we're aware of. Yeah.
Which is also very funny, because it means that Voldemort is using, like, his, like, Peter's marauder's name.
Yeah, that's weird, too.
Like, it seems like an odd choice for Voldemort to be like... What do your friends call you? I'll call you that.
What do your friends call you? I know. It also seems like maybe if Wormtail was like trying to be a spy and needed like a code name, it was like, that's a terrible code name, bro. The other members of the order came up with it. You know?
your literal two best friends.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So either way, he goes for Wormtail for the rest of the book, which is just a fun change per the character, like officially becoming evil and whatnot. Yes. And I love so Harry's still trying to remember the dream. I love the description. It says it was like trying to keep water in his cupped hands. The details are now trickling away as fast as he tried to hold on to them. Because that is exactly what it feels like when you're trying to remember a dream.
It's exactly what it feels like when you're trying to remember a dream. And honestly, as this book progresses, it's almost exactly what it feels like trying to remember the first chapter of this book.
Yes, because like Harry, like he's saying Voldemort and Wormtail have been talking about someone they had killed, though Harry could not remember the name. The name is Bertha Jorkins.
Yes.
And it is such a bummer Harry cannot remember this.
If there was one detail, because the rest of us are going to have to endure everyone speculating as to where Bertha Jorkins is.
Including Harry.
Including Harry for the rest of the story.
Yes.
So it's like, Harry.
Dude, put it together, man.
Yes.
If only you'd remember this one fact, you really could have started connecting. And what's weird is that like you are told in chapter one that Voldemort killed Bertha Jorkins. And as the story progresses, because she seems like such a non-character, you're like, what did happen to her?
Yes!
What happened? And you're like, wait, I know what happened. Why am I still wondering?
It tells us word for word.
It tells you right up front.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's
something where I want to think it's clever writing, and the intention was because it does drop you into such a weird first chapter. And I remember the first time we ever read this book, and I was like, what is going on? Are we still in Harry Potter? What is Little Hangleton?
Who's Frank?
Who's Dot?
Yeah. At the Hanged Man.
At the
town gossip.
Yes. Yeah. So it'd be curious if the idea there was almost like, I'm just going to tell you all the information and then let the rest of the book unfold. And it's the longest book we've had yet. So hopefully by the time anything important happens, you've completely forgotten. And then
exactly
when you read it again, you're going to be like, this is it right there.
Bertha Jorkins, right in the first chapter. Wow. Don't feel good.
Yeah.
Anyway, though, Harry decides he needs to tell somebody. He's trying to think who he can ask for advice about the scar hurting. He talks himself out of a lot of correct answers. but I love the description, dude. Like, what he was doing before he was going to bed was reading a book, Flying with the Cannons, which you hear Ron give to him, I think as a Christmas present.
Yes,
or as a birthday gift at one point. So it's cool that he still has it and is reading it. Although, I was surprised by this particular line. He said, Harry walked over the book, picked it up, and watched one of the wizards score a spectacular goal, which I was like, the cannons scored a spectacular goal? No.
That doesn't sound
right. Were they
being
scored upon?
They filmed it at practice.
It had to be.
For the book.
Yeah,
for the book.
Yeah, certainly.
But then one of the lines I do think that stands out in a big way, though, is that like it says, he watched them put the ball through the 50-foot hoop, then he snapped the book shut. Even Quidditch, in Harry's opinion, the best sport in the world, couldn't distract him at the moment. And this I think honestly illustrates in such a massive way, like the life that Voldemort is actively stealing from Harry.
Yes.
Because what 14-year-old shouldn't have the ability to daydream about their favorite sport?
Right.
You know, like at, for any 14-year-old, that should be well within your rights.
Right. But, I mean, he literally fell asleep reading the book.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But now at this point, like this is, I think that's just like one of those good setups. Like Harry doesn't get to have a normal life.
Nope, not at all. Yeah. I also love the next sentence. It says, Privet Drive looks exactly as a respectable suburban street would be expected to look in the early hours of Saturday morning, which to me is like an extreme throwback to the very first sentence of the entire series, which just establishes Privet Drive as this like horribly boring suburban place.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
It even reminds me of like the perfectly normal. Thank you very much.
Oh, yes. Mr. Yes. and Mrs. Dursley of number 4 Privet Drive. We're proud to say they're perfectly normal. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, you nailed it. Yeah, you nailed it. Yeah. And I think it's hailing back to that because it says, yeah. As far as Harry could see through the darkness, there wasn't a living creature in sight. Not even a cat.
Not even a cat. I know. It's like it is definitely a reference to that because in the first book, there is a cat.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is McGonagall.
Which is McGonagall. Which, yeah. By the way, rest in peace.
Rest in peace. I know. That was...
Yeah, Wands out. Wands out. Can wands we get out. Wands up? Yeah, wands there we out. Go. Look at you guys go.
You guys are ready. My goodness.
Oh, moment for Maggie Smith.
I know.
Wonderful.
Do you have a favorite McGonagall moment?
I mean, it's got to be like the, I've always wanted to use that spell.
I love that one. I love that one. I love when like she's telling Harry to go look and she's like, whoa, wait. Harry, it's good to see you, Potter.
I know.
I know. It's like, oh, just by the way.
Yes.
It's such a tiny moment, but it's like, you're like, yeah, it's really good. I've really been believing in you the whole time.
Yes, yeah. Yes. McGonagall loves Harry.
Yeah.
Why is it always you three?
I know.
Have a biscuit, Potter.
Have a biscuit.
Yes, yes.
Everyone's talking at once. Okay, well, we could honestly probably do this all night, so.
Yes. We'll trudge forward, but.
We shall.
Good moment. Good moment,
good moment, yes.
Yes. Let's see here. What happens next? Basically, Harry is saying it wasn't the pain that bothered him. Harry was no stranger to pain and injury. He had lost all the bones from his right arm once and had them painfully regrown in a night.
Yep.
Wonder who caused that.
Well, Ben, I dare say it's pretty obvious.
The same arm had been pierced by a venomous foot-long fang. Is this the first time it's ever been described as being a foot-long?
Big.
Okay, because I've never pictured it quite that big.
Huge. Yeah, huge snake that none of the portraits saw all year. Not one of them.
It's like the lights go off and they fall asleep.
They are out.
Yeah.
Like, no need to pay attention to that. The laser blinds them. That's correct. Yes.
Exactly.
With its heat vision.
Good point.
Absolutely. Yep.
let's see here. Only last year, Harry had fallen 50 feet from an airborne broomstick. He was used to bizarre accidents and injuries. They were unavoidable if you attended Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry.
I'm like, are they? Are they, Harry?
No place safer.
No place safer.
No place safer.
No place safer. Everyone keeps saying it.
Right.
It's like, it hasn't been safe once. My goodness. I guess it does follow up and said, safest place, you were unavoidable if you had a knack for attracting a lot of trouble, which, of course, I guess Harry does.
He does.
Yeah. Why is it always you three, indeed?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Yep. So then he does recall, even though this is the first time Harry has experienced like the mental connection between Voldemort, he has had his scar hurt before, which was when he went into the forest back in year one as well. And that was just because he was like very near Lord Voldemort.
Yes, yeah. Yes. But it does follow it up by saying, but Voldemort couldn't be here now. The idea of Voldemort lurking in Privet Drive was absurd, impossible. And the thing is that it actually is impossible because of the bond of blood charm. Like Harry is completely and utterly safe exactly where he is.
Exactly
Voldemort
where
can't
he is.
Come there.
I know. It's interesting that like Harry doesn't know that at this point, but also it's like he feels like it's impossible, but like last year, Sirius was lurking down Privet Drive.
That's true. You know? That's like, true.
For all he knew, that was a bad guy. But either way, you're right. The bond of blood is in place at this moment, which has got to be just the most wackadoodle spell in the entire series. Like,
it's basically like, hey, while Harry's not off at wizard school, how come nobody's ever attacking him at this suburban house?
Yeah.
Which, by the way, if we go one line down, it says, and then he jumped slightly as he heard his cousin Dudley give a tremendous grunting snore from the next room. So not just a suburban house with paper-thin walls.
Paper-thin walls, yeah. They could get in there.
Yes.
But, yeah, the bond of blood, if you don't know, basically can only be activated if you are the beneficiary of the sacrificial love charm,
right,
which Harry is because Lily dies, casts the spell on Harry. At that point, a third-party wizard, Dumbledore, has to take the beneficiary to a blood relative of the victim, put them in there. They have to willingly accept them into their house and then cast a charm on the house. But apparently Harry is the only person to ever survive with sacrificial love. So how Dumbledore knows how to do this at all is beyond me. It's so narrow.
Thank you for coming to our TED Talk.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess he knows about it and it works out, but that's why no one could attack Harry at the Dursleys.
Yes.
Yeah. But also on the note of Harry hearing Dudley here, this is a nice setup for the paper-thin walls because in the next book, yes, Harry is going to be taunting Dudley for like making fun of or beating up 10-year-olds in the neighborhood. And Dudley is going to be like, oh, what about Cedric? And yes, Harry is, you know, he's not happy about it.
Yeah. He is definitely not happy that Dudley has been hearing him in his nightmares in the middle, yeah, of the night. But you're absolutely correct. I wrote the exact same note. That's a good catch.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Harry does go on to say, asleep was the best way Harry liked the Dursleys best.
I love that line.
I know. It wasn't as though there were ever any help to him awake. And it's like, well, technically they don't need to be conscious, but that bond of blood is in effect. So they're a little bit helpful.
They are a little bit helpful. If they weren't there, that wouldn't be there. The book also confirms they are his only living relatives, in case you're wondering, like, isn't there anyone else he could have stayed with? But there's not.
Yeah.
In case you're wondering what happened, Harry's grandparents on his dad's side, Fleamont and Euphoria Potter, great names, both died of dragon pox, which... Yeah. Yeah, sad. Which I guess they were at Lily and James's wedding, but then died before ever meeting Harry.
It's bad timing.
Bad timing, but he does see them in the Mirror of Erised.
He does.
And then this is the canon explanation for what happened to Mr. and Mrs. Evans, is that they died normal Muggle deaths. And that's
convenient.
It. Convenient. Convenient. Okay. I don't know what that even means. A normal Muggle death.
And that's too bad, too, because I think they were pretty jazzed about Lily going to wizard school.
Yeah, I know.
You know, so I feel like they would have been like, Harry!
Harry! Very exciting.
And but then Petunia would have been mad.
Yeah, yeah. Can you imagine being at someone's funeral and they're like, how'd they die? And you're just like, normally. Normally.
Normal.
They normally died, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anywho, I do love this description as well. It says that Harry was as welcome at the Dursleys as Dry Rot.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Just a good piece of trivia.
Just a good piece of trivia. Don't.
For your next Harry Potter bar night.
Don't write it down. People have been hitting us with those all up and down the West Coast.
They have.
Yeah, we'll be like, did we write this down? And like, yeah, you said write it down. And then we don't remember.
It's so obvious when you're looking at it on the page.
And it feels so obvious.
It's like it's right there. Dry rot.
Dry
rot. What else can it be?
Dry rot.
This is going to come back to
remember
bite us.
Remember it, Ben.
Well, I'm going to try.
I won't. Yeah. But so then we also get the explanation that the way the Dursleys, that for the last years they've been telling everyone that Harry went to St. Brutus's Secure Center for incurably criminal boys, to which I still think, like, how is that better? What does that say? Like, they still think you're raising him.
Yes. Like,
right?
this must reflect so badly.
On them.
Right.
Yes.
Like, what are you doing?
What are you doing over there? Yeah. So, I don't know what they're thinking, but that's what they're going with. I hate this line, though. It says, Harry had never been able to confide in them or tell them anything about his life in the wizarding world, which is just a true bummer. But it's setting up Harry's next line of thinking, which is, who does he have in his life who he could treat like a parent? And he's going to miss a real obvious one. But, We'll get to that. So let's see. There you get the recap that if it hadn't been for Voldemort, Harry would not have had the lightning scar on his forehead. If it hadn't been for Voldemort, Harry would still have parents. Super sad. It mentions that Voldemort was the most powerful wizard for a century, which is like, which definitely means he was more powerful than Grindelwald.
Yes.
But then it's like, who was it before then Don't know.
I know. That's. I mean, that feels
unknown
like...
unknown information.
That feels like fodder for more world expansion.
It does. Yes, it does.
That we should pay attention to.
Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
This sale season, Ritual is urging you to think about what's essential. Your daily health? Pretty essential. Making sure your products are heavy metal tested, clean label project certified, and sourced through a traceable supply chain? Also essential. So this Black Friday, skip the micro trends and put your savings where they matter. Your health. With 40% off daily essentials like Stress Relief and Symbiotic Plus for gut support. Head to ritual.com/podcast and shop responsibly.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
The next line, though, that I think is kind of interesting as well, because it says, the most powerful dark wizard for a century, a wizard who had been gaining power steadily for 11 years. And what's the rule, everybody? When it's not 7, it's 13. And when it's not 13, it's 12. And when it's not 12, it's 11.
Yeah. It's 10.
And then when it's not 11, it's 10.
It's 10, yeah. But also, I'm not sure 11 is the right number here. Because this would mean that Voldemort's rise to power started in 1970, if I'm doing my math right. Which is just not, like, I don't know. Is that when he, like, officially started campaigning? Because we know, like, in 1942, he murdered the Riddles of the last chapter. In 1943, he murdered Myrtle.
Right.
Yes. So, like, I don't know why it says he started in 1970.
There's a really big question. You're right. Like this there's almost like Dumbledore's missing, not Dumbledore's, Voldemort's missing years.
Yeah.
Like, especially, I mean, because I think we've been able to math it as far as maybe like the mid to late 50s when he finally like encounters Hepzibah Smith.
Yeah.
And makes like he collects the
diadem and the cup and the locket.
Exactly. And so you're kind of like, okay, like what is going on during those other years? Like, is he acting covertly? Is he hiding and disguising the Horcruxes?
Yeah.
Like does that take like a lot longer than we think? And then it's kind of like the last and final thing is kind of like, you know, it ends up being Harry, and that's his like major blockade.
Yeah.
Cause it seems like he's basically on a one way path towards domination. Like,
yeah.
He's winning.
Yeah.
And it's almost like right at that point where he's about to like fully seize power and complete his mission of the seven part soul is the exact moment he goes down.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When he gets a seven part soul, which is when he attacks Harry, is also the moment he becomes his weakest.
Also true. Also true.
So it goes very ironic. Yeah.
Yes. It goes to show that the seven part soul, completely useless.
Yeah, not a
good
call.
Just don't maim your soul.
Yeah, don't do it. How about
normally
that?
You don't have to tell people this.
Right. So we continue to get the recaps as Voldemort had killed his father and mother, turned the wand on Harry, and had performed the curse that had disposed of many full-grown witches of wizards in his steady rise to power, but it did not work and backfired on Voldemort. This is also, it's like, it's setting the, it happened in the Riddle House too, where it talks about like how they discovered the riddles and how they had no marks on them and like, you know, what happened to them. We don't know. And it's really building up to when the class where Barty Crouch Jr. is going to teach them about Avada Kedavra. But what it's like, they want you to start thinking like, what is this dangerous spell?
Yes.
That keeps popping up.
In fact, I think actually it's in the previous chapter when the spell is actually used on Frank Bryce. It says that he was screaming so loudly that he never heard the words.
Right.
The thing in the chair spoke as it raised a wand. So it's
exactly.
Like, it's kind of like we are tiptoeing around words of Avada Kedavra.
Yeah.
However, again, I would say it's more cleverly done than the Azkaban guards situation.
Oh, absolutely.
For sure. Where it's just sort of like the Azkaban guards until they're Dementors, then they're Dementors forever. And it's like, okay, well, you know, you're just hiding it under a rock.
Right.
Like, you know. But yeah, so I think this is a better version of sort of like, yeah, like kind of like, let's get reacquainted. Let's sort of start to put some emphasis on the idea that this spell is going to be important.
Yes. Yeah. Cause it is. But then it gives us a little more background on Voldemort saying he'd been reduced to something barely alive. His power is gone. His life almost extinguished. Really just setting up all of the Horcrux stuff right here. Like, why didn't he actually die, even though this killing curse had rebounded upon him? So just good setup for way down the line right there. And mentions that Harry Potter become famous. So that's like all of like book, not all of book one, but it's a lot of it. Very succinct recap.
Yes, yes, indeed. Yep. Yeah, we're covering all of our bases. And on that note, it does also say that the terror in which the secret community of witches and wizards had lived for so long had lifted. That, like, one single sentence, like, whenever we're writing, like, a what-if scenario where Harry isn't attacked as a baby, we oftentimes say that he, like, Voldemort optionally chooses to create a false calm.
Yeah.
I think this one sentence is, like, what reinforces that entire concept. Because
basically
it just says Voldemort had fled. And that lifted all of the terror that he had been raining on them. And it's like, he wasn't defeated.
Right.
You know, so it doesn't take much for people to be like, we're good again.
We're good. Yeah. So that's sort of, it's a very useful line for us writing
yes,
our scripts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very good. Let's see. We get to learn that, in fact, his birthday had passed and that he's looking at his birthday cards, which, good to know they made it to him this time. No Dobby shenanigans are in play. Always good.
Or wonky.
Or wonky shenanigans here. Let's see. And then as he's looking at the birthday cards, he thinks, oh, what if I asked Hermione for help? And I love his, like, summoning of Hermione in his head. It's like, oh, Scarlet, Harry, that's really serious. Right, Professor Dumbledore, and I'll go check common magical ailments, afflictions. Maybe there's something about cursed scars. Which is, like, that's exactly what Hermione would say.
I know. I have two notes. The first is, you think it's any coincidence that he thought of Hermione first?
Not at all. Yeah, right, you know. And they're on first. Mm-hmm.
We got any Hermione people here tonight? No.
Oh, some.
Some. More
Absolutely.
Than none. Okay.
More than none.
It's
Enough.
Okay. It's not a hill I die on or anything. But no, the other thing I was gonna say that I thought was so funny about this is exactly what you said. It's like, I'm like, wow, this is like exactly what Hermione would say.
Yes.
As if the person who wrote these words doesn't just also write Hermione.
Right, I know.
Yeah. It's like, I'm like, man, Harry knows his friends.
Right?
She would say that.
Yep. Absolutely. Also, I think it's funny that it, like, Harry's like, I don't think a book would have this kind of information. Ironically, Harry is inside of a book that is very helpful to this problem.
Very meta analysis.
Very meta. Yes. Yeah, there we go.
Right. Yeah. But no, he makes the very good point that because Harry is, as far as he knew, the only person who had ever survived a curse like Voldemort's, it's probably not likely that it would be listed in common magical ailments and afflictions. So.
Yes, but uncommon magical ailments and afflictions.
Right, yes. The sequel.
The thing is, it's like, he says he's the only living person to have survived it, but like, for Dumbledore to know what it is and to know how to cast a bond of blood, like, it has to have happened to someone else ever. Right?
Yes.
Like, somewhere in history this has happened before. It just maybe didn't have such grand ramifications.
Right. Maybe there was no prophecy.
Yeah.
Maybe
not. I know. No chosen one.
Right.
Yeah. And then he wonders about where Dumbledore is. He says, as for informing the headmaster, Harry had no idea where Dumbledore went during the summer holidays. And I'm like, dude, your owl can find anyone. Okay. Is this your excuse?
Send Hedwig.
Send Hedwig. It's not. He's going to correct this exact thing in just a second. He says he's sure Harry or Hedwig would be able to find him, which I learned new things about owls today, where apparently, because I've always wondered, like, how does that work? Like, Harry's constantly sending owls to Sirius, who's just moving around the country, and Hedwig always finds him.
Hedwig is very OP in some capacity.
Yes, absolutely. And then you're also, like, everyone's always like, why didn't the ministry just, like, send an owl to Sirius Black and then follow the owl? Like, it's a great question. So, it has been addressed. So, apparently the way in which owls find the wizards, like, I was reading this, there's an article on Pottermore, it says there's always been a connection between the names of people, there's always been a connection between names and the people who own them. So, which I love that sentence, straight up.
It's a very, very name of the wind sentence.
And whilst it is mysterious to wizards, it is something that owls in particular are very clued in on, even though they are not specifically magical beasts.
That is super fascinating.
It's
not the magic coming from them, but it does remind me a little bit of the unique magic that, like, house elves possess. Mm-hmm. Like, there's, like, the scene in Malfoy Manor where Dobby's like, of course, sir, I'm an elf.
Right.
But, like, I think maybe there's, like, a piece of that sort of brand of magic that's, like, kind of different, kind of unique, even if it's not, you know, being emitted from the owl.
Right. So owls can just sort of sense this. I also learned that apparently the use of owl post is so heavy between the wizarding world, like the government of any given country and the people who own the owls, that it is safe to assume that every owl is being put to use by the, like, the Ministry of Magic of that country or a witch or wizard. Like,
so
there
are no wild owls.
There are no wild owls. Which I was like, that's quite a claim. It also means that when Sirius finds a Pigwidgeon to send to Ron, he definitely just stole that owl from somebody. Like, there's no wild owls for him to just be like, well, what do you know?
How about that?
You know?
I liked the idea that he, like, climbed a tree and just sort of been like,
yeah.
Oh, gotcha. I gotcha.
I got a job for you. Yeah. So, anyway, that's how owls work. Oh, and then you're wondering why can't the ministry just send a letter to Sirius Black? It is basically, you can cast spells upon yourself, like detection charms or whatever, that will sever the owl's ability to find you. And you can even be as specific so that only certain owls can find you.
It's pretty cool.
So that is why Harry specifically can send Hedwig to find Sirius, but the ministry cannot just, like, follow an owl to Sirius.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there I love you go. That.
I learned all that today, and I was like, I can't believe I didn't know this.
I know. Yeah. So. How do owls work?
How do owls work? There
Not
we go.
Not a question you think you normally have to ask.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then it goes on to what Harry thinks would just be, like, the most ridiculous thing in the world to write to Dumbledore. Dear Professor Dumbledore, sorry to bother you, but my scar hurt this morning. Yours sincerely, Harry Potter.
Yeah. He's like, it says, even inside his head, the words sounded stupid. And I'm like,
no, Harry, bad.
No. Mm-mm, don't do that. You'll sound too stupid to Dumbledore. That's what Dumbledore would open that letter. He'd be like, waste of time.
Waste of time.
Waste of time. Which, not for nothing, here's what Harry actually writes to Sirius later on. He says, a weird thing happened this morning, though. My scar hurt again. Last time that happened, it was because Voldemort was at Hogwarts, but I don't reckon he can be anywhere near me now, can he? Do you know if cursed scars sometimes hurt years afterwards? That's what he says. It's basically the same thing he decides not to send to Dumbledore.
Yes, but also, just write that to Dumbledore.
Just write that to... I literally wrote that. I was like, why can't you write this to Dumbledore, too?
Yes.
Doesn't make sense. And then, also, this is all he can come up with, but it's like, dude, that is not what you would send. Describe the dream in detail.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what you would send. Be like, I had a vision of Lord Voldemort. And, Dumbledore knows about the second prophecy.
Yes.
That Wormtail is going to find him. He'd be like, hey, guess what? Got an update on that.
Yes.
Wormtail has found him.
Dumbledore opens that letter, and what actually happens, he's like, oh, no.
Uh-oh. Do you know who they murdered? Bertha. Harry's like,
tip of the tongue.
Tip of the tongue, you know? Tip of the tongue. Don't know what happened. Yeah, so Dumbledore, or he just talks himself out of writing to Dumbledore for some reason.
Yep. Then he finally gets to Ron, who responds with, "Your scar hurt? But you know who can't be near you now, can he? I mean, you know, wouldn't you? He'd be trying to do you in again, wouldn't he? I don't know, Harry. Maybe cursed scars always twinge a bit. I'll ask Dad."
Yeah. Great Ron answer. Great Ron answer. You get a little reminder that Mr. Weasley works at the Ministry at the Misuse of Muggle Artifacts office, which is just setting you up for Quidditch World Cup later when all the Ministry will be there and Arthur's involved and all that stuff.
Yes.
But then this is how Harry talks him out of this. In any case, Harry didn't like the idea of the whole Weasley family knowing that he, Harry, was getting jumpy about a few moments' pain. And I'm like, I don't think Ron would broadcast this.
Yeah, Ron comes out of breakfast the next morning. He's like, get this.
Get it. Harry's scar. Because as far, like, the last time Harry's scar hurt, he did tell Ron. And he was like, I think it means Voldemort's near.
Yes.
And, like, Ron would take it seriously, you know? I don't know if he'd be able to help. But anyway, it's like, I think that's a weird reason not to write to Ron either. Although he does follow it up and say, it sounds like he just doesn't like want them to like be thinking less of him because he thinks the Weasleys were Harry's favorite family in the world. Which is like, oh, so great. And then we get set up, said Ron had mentioned something about coming to the Quidditch World Cup. That will happen very soon. Let's see. And then, he didn't want his visit to be punctuated with anxious inquiries about his scar. But, like, doesn't he tell Ron and Hermione about the scar anyway?
Yeah, this feels like one of those classic, like, we can't give him a reason to do this now. So we'll just wait a little while. Yes. It'll be fine. We get there when we get there.
Oh, boy. And then this next sentence drives. This next line of reasoning, I don't know where, like, Harry. Let's see. What he needed, what he wanted, and it's a very sad sentiment, is someone like a parent, an adult wizard whose advice he could ask without feeling stupid, someone who cared about him, who had experience with dark magic. Like, I don't know. Like, Lupin?
Lupin!
Oh my, like, how does he not think of Lupin? Like, he knew Sirius for, like, 5 minutes.
Yes.
You know? Like, he spent time with Lupin. He, like, told him things without feeling stupid. He cared about him. It was his dad's other best friend. Experience with dark magic. He was the defense against the dark magic. Like, right to Lupin, man. He's not on the run. Oh, it drives me crazy that he does not write to Lupin right here. But whatever.
It would be too easy for all of the tasks to just, like, to introduce Lupin back into the book. And, like, dear Lupin, any idea how to get past the dragon? Yes, Harry. Here's what you can do.
I know. Like, you know Lupin's not above breaking the rules. He gives him the mat back.
Yes.
He gives him the cloak back. He's like, oh, yeah, no, I'm totally. Like, Harry's serious tunnel vision, this book costs him a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
If he could just write to Lupin, he'd have been owning those tasks. How do you breathe underwater?
Lupin's like, gillyweed.
Gillyweed, duh. Duh.
I will send charm. You some.
No problem. You know what you could do? We all turned into animals. You need some help, you know?
Yeah.
Harry.
Think dolphin thoughts.
Think dolphin thoughts. Maybe you can do it. Oh, that would be the worst if you finally got there and you were like an aquatic animal.
Yes.
And you just weren't near water.
Right, yeah. You just transform and it's like,
Can't breathe, can't breathe. Yeah.
That would be a problem.
That would be a big problem. But anyway, Harry lands on the super obvious answer of Sirius Black.
Yep, known criminal. Yep,
known criminal.
Wanted, on the run.
On the run. Easy to help. Must know about cursed scars and stuff like that. And he starts writing. I'm surprised by this. He opens with Dear Sirius, which, like, dude, in a second he's going to be like, he's going to mention how Sirius never says where he's from so he doesn't, like, get caught. Right. And, like, Harry in the meantime is like, Dear Sirius, right there. Like, use a code name, man. He has an obvious one.
Right, yes.
Like, I know.
Like, Voldemort is even using Peters.
Right,
and
right.
Harry can't even use.
Take a note from Voldemort's book here, dude. Just padfoot this thing.
Padfoot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but then at this point, I almost think that Harry is just trolling you because it says, Dear Sirius, then paused, wondering how to best phrase his problem, still marveling at the fact that he hadn't thought of Sirius straight away.
I'm marveling that you haven't think of Lupin. But I guess it's not surprising, because after all, he'd only found out that Sirius was his godfather 2 months ago. And it says this, too. There was a simple reason for Sirius's complete absence from Harry's life until then. I'm like, simple? I mean, I think I just read a whole book about that, but... Sure. Simple.
Simple. Yep. This known convicted murderer had convinced Harry's parents that somebody else should be the person who's the secret keeper because Harry is the subject of a prophecy. Turned out that person ended up being a double crosser who ended up resulting in the death of Harry's parents.
Yeah.
At which point he then confronted that person. That person blew up a city block pretending his own death and then lived as a rat for several years until you broke out of prison. Simple.
Easy. Very succinct.
Thanks.
Very good. Yeah. Very simple reason. Thank you. Oh, man. Let's see. What do we get here? We do get the nice recap of like all of Prisoner, though. It says the murders for which he'd been convicted had been committed by Wormtail, Voldemort's supporter, whom nearly everyone believed was dead. So that's like, yeah, that's like all of Prisoner right
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
One sentence. Very good. For one glorious hour, Harry believed he'd be leaving the Dursleys at last because Sirius had offered him a home. That is so sad. Like, because that offer is out there and it gets taken away and you feel like it's going to come to pass eventually. Like, we're going to figure this out. And it never happens.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Yep. That is such a difficult one because, and I mean, I've brought it up so many times throughout the podcast, but I do feel like it's so well established so early just how awful it is living with the Dursleys that like that looming threat of expulsion is always like the strong arm lever that's being used against us as like the reader where we're like, no, Harry, do not get expelled because then we have to go and watch you be living at the Dursleys because apparently the books would continue even if you just went on to live an ordinary muggle life.
Yeah.
Like, and none of us want to read that because it sounds miserable,
right?
But yeah, then there's this glorious moment where it's like, oh, he could go live with Sirius.
I know, and it's like driven home too, because like even at the end of the last book, like Harry has heard the prophecy about Wormtail's going to escape, Voldemort's going to come back. Like he knows that's happening, and he knows Wormtail escaped.
Right,
like the prophecy is out there, and at the same time, Harry is more concerned. He's dreading summer and the future more because he has to go live with the Dursleys.
So yeah.
It's like, to him, living with the Dursleys is worse than Voldemort coming back, you know, which says a lot about the Dursleys. They're not good. They're not good. Then we get some notes about them, how they forced him to like hide all of this stuff under the stairs and never let him do magic at home and stuff like that. Although I like this line. It says, this year was a little better because Harry had conveniently forgotten to tell them that Sirius was innocent. It's great. Conveniently. Which I'm just like, also like, but as if they'd care. Like, you know.
Oh, right. Like, right. They weren't going to like Sirius regardless.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I follow your meaning.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. But we do learn that Harry's received two letters from Sirius since he'd been back at Privet Drive. I really wish we got to read those two letters, but we don't.
I know. It also says that they were delivered by large, brightly colored tropical birds.
Yeah.
To which I was like, what birds?
What birds? I know, because one, does this mean like any birds can do the male thing?
Right.
You know?
Yes.
I guess so. Maybe not as good as owls, but...
As humans are underutilizing birds.
I know. We are not good at birds. And I'm like wondering what these like large flashy birds even are.
Well, later on, he will say, thanks for your last letter. That bird was enormous. It could hardly get through my window. To which then I was just trying to figure out like what large birds live in this area of the world. And the only thing I could come up with isn't that colorful, but it's called the Eurasian Griffin Vulture.
The Griffin Vulture.
The Griffin Vulture.
Okay.
I know. I was like, that's pretty perfect.
It's pretty perfect for this show.
It is.
Yeah, I was also trying to look up birds, and I came up with the gray heron, which isn't colorful, but is big and sort of tropical and native.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's in the area.
It's in the area. It's not as good.
It's not really plot relevant, but like I always pictured like macaws, but like there's no way he went to like South America, right?
I know. I always think of like a big parrot or something, and I'm like, but that wouldn't be too big to fit through the window.
Yeah.
Unless.
It's a really big bird.
Really big parrot. Yeah. Like think of a regular parrot, double it. There you go.
Big parrot.
Big parrot. Yeah.
A flamingo.
A flamingo. I get the flamingo would be good.
A flamingo would be funny. Be good.
Yeah. It seems like Harry could correctly identify a flamingo.
Could you?
He just sees it. He's like, what is this? Never heard of one of these.
Huge and pink.
Huge and pink.
Could you imagine the Dursley's house with a flamingo in the window?
That'd be great.
Oh man, maybe it stayed and grazed for a while, and the other suburban lawn keepers are sort of like, did they put a pink flamingo in their yard?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think if it was a flamingo, if I was Harry, I'd just like let it out in the hallway and shut the door. Whoops!
Enjoy.
That's a flamingo. Yeah, that'd be amazing. let's see. Then Harry's trying to think about where Sirius must be, and he thinks that he might be like in around palm trees and white sand, because somehow Harry found it hard to imagine Dementors surviving for long in bright sunlight. Perhaps that's why Sirius had gone south. Which this is just like a weird thing. Like later in book six, you will learn that if Dementors are breeding, they're actually causing fog and mist. So
true.
Like, I guess if it is bright and sunny and there's not lots of depression in the area, maybe they wouldn't want to be there. But like, it's sort of like a numbers thing. If there's enough of them, they can cause enough misery to kind of make the sun go away.
Oh, that's a bummer.
I know.
I really thought the whole beach thing was just like a safe way to do it.
Right, yeah, you'd think. Maybe not.
So they could ruin the Caribbean.
They could. They could just... That'd be bad. Dementors down there. No good. Then we get to the letter he starts writing Sirius. There's a funny little anachronism in here. He's telling him, I love that he doesn't just like, he really buries the lead about the dream, because first he needs to tell him about Dudley's diet.
Voldemort that, might be rising to power, but let me tell you about Dudley.
Let me tell you about my cousin. Let me tell you, he's not doing good. He's smuggling donuts into his room. They told him he'd have to cut his pocket money if he kept doing it. Says he got really angry and chucked his PlayStation out of the window. And so, fun fact, this letter is being written in August of 1944, and the PlayStation... What?
1994.
When did I say?
44.
44! PlayStations did not come out in the 40s, you guys.
They were made of wood back then.
They were made of wood, yeah. They also didn't come out in August of 1994. They came out in December of 1994 in Japan. So this is just a straight up anachronism here. So there are no PlayStations.
Wow.
He also goes on to say that he can no longer play Mega Mutilation Part 3, partly because the PlayStation didn't come out yet, but also partly because it's a made-up game. So...
So it went so far as to include PlayStation TM, but Mega Mutilation Part 3 is just a completely made up game.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Why not?
Yep. So then we get into the letter itself, where he says, basically what we said earlier, a weird thing happened this morning, though. My scar hurt again. Last time that happened, it was because Voldemort was at Hogwarts, but I don't reckon he can be anywhere near me now, can he? Do you know if curse scars sometimes hurt years afterward? And then down below it, he says, there is no point to put in the thing about the dream. And I'm like, bro, that's like the main part you should be putting in. That's like the big, big part.
Yes. Yeah. We talked about Dudley's diet and PlayStation that he doesn't have.
Yes.
But didn't talk about the Voldemort death dream. Yeah, no
didn't
problem.
Didn't
no
talk
problem.
About Voldemort murdering somebody and Wormtail, who Sirius spent the entire last book hunting. Like, can you imagine? It's just like, Sirius, I can imagine his letters is like, let me know if you hear about Wormtail, if I really love to find that guy.
Yes.
Harry's like, I think I might know where he is. Don't need to bring that up.
Don't need to bring, yeah. Eventually, Sirius knows, like, he hears about this dream, and he's like, Harry, what were you thinking?
What were you thinking? He's like, well, yeah. From Harry's point of view, Sirius wouldn't care where Wormtail is at all. Also, just fun thing, Harry doesn't send this letter to Dumbledore, but Sirius is in communication with Dumbledore, so despite his insistence that he doesn't need to tell him, Sirius immediately tells Dumbledore anyway.
There we go.
Yeah, so it does work out.
Sirius being at least reasonably responsible.
Yeah.
For once. Yes. Yeah.
But what I love is that, there's no point to put in the thing about the dream. He didn't want to look as though he was too worried. Like, bro, that's not what's important, Harry. Like, is he forgetting the prophecy? Like, it just happened. It's like, Wormtail's going to return to Voldemort. You saw it happen.
Yes. No, I know.
Not that worried.
It's okay. We needed to wait for plot reasons, Jay.
Yeah.
We'll get there when we get there. It'll be fine. But speaking of getting there when we get there, We've gotten there.
We're there. That is the end of chapter 2 of Goblet of Fire.
Bam.
Oh, man. That was good. A good recap chapter.
It was a good recap chapter. Yes, yes. So this is normally the part of the show where I would ask Jay if he has a review for us. But since we happen to have a live audience here with us, maybe you guys could let us know. How'd we do?
Oh, man.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, guys.
Thank you guys so much. Oh, my gosh. Thank you guys so much. I think that's a 5-star review,
Ben. I think that counts as 5 stars.
That's so good. Thank you guys so much. Oh my gosh. All right, I'll close us out real quick here. And then we're going to move on to a Q&A and the Danger Beans.
Oh no, I forgot.
Yeah, I know. There we go. But guys, thank you so much for listening to this chapter. Make sure you join us next week for chapter 3, The Invitation, here on Through the Gryffindor. Oh. Woo! Oh man.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
This sale season, Ritual is urging you to think about what's essential. Your daily health? Pretty essential. Making sure your products are heavy metal tested, clean label project certified, and sourced through a traceable supply chain? Also essential. So this Black Friday, skip the micro trends and put your savings where they matter. Your health. With 40% off daily essentials like Stress Relief and Symbiotic Plus for gut support. Head to ritual.com/podcast and shop responsibly.
Y'all, I am so excited because Through the Gryffindor is heading back out on tour. Starting in February of 2025, we'll be performing live shows in Charlotte, Orlando, Tampa, Jacksonville, Atlanta, and Nashville. And as always, we will be bringing all of the magic with a tour-long Jay versus Ben trivia showdown with questions submitted and asked by all of you. And then, of course, we will dim the lights for a live recording of Through the Gryffindor. And y'all, these nights have made for some of my all-time favorite since we have started making content on the internet. It is truly a magical evening, nerding out Harry Potter style with the very best community online. Plus, we have a VIP upgrade for each show if you want to come and meet Jay and I, take photos, ask questions, and score an exclusive signed tour poster before the show begins. We would love to see you. We'd love to meet you, and we hope you will come and join us for all of the fun. Tickets are available in the show notes for every show or at supercarlinbrothers.com.